Banta with Tony and Mimi, a cross-generational conversation between a millennial.
My cutoff game is quick. Like, when I say I'm done,
she's done.
I'm done.
And a Gen Zer.
Don't just the cover, just the book. Don't just the cover. When you read a book, don't just...
I have to find it for you because it's so funny.
Oh, Lord.
Kick back and enjoy as we laugh, feel, and heal.
All right, welcome to another episode of Banta with Tony and
Mimi.
I hope you guys had a wonderful holiday.
Yeah.
We're doing this episode after Christmas.
Yeah.
Before New Year's. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited because next week is actually when our first episode of Banta will drop. And
that's when
it will be out in the world.
Yeah, I'm excited and nervous, and I don't think it'll hit me until it's out, until I see it and can play it from a platform and listen to it in the car and be like, oh my gosh, that's me.
I know.
Yeah. But it's also exciting because this is actually a project that we started together and are going to launch together and continue together. Yeah, it's very exciting.
Yes, I'm excited and I'm nervous because for me, it's not my first time doing like something creative. Mm-hmm. And they always say you learn from the things that don't work out. So I think I've tried a lot of creative things that haven't really panned out for me. But I think that's what at the back of my head, I'm just super nervous about. I'm like, oh my gosh.
It's going to go good, I think.
So we'll see how people receive it, how we are able to cope with, you know, doing our episodes. Because the goal is to do an episode every week.
So, yeah, to actually have a set schedule that we've worked on for you guys.
And we don't have a set date yet because I was thinking Wednesdays, but we'll see. If the first one will drop on a Wednesday, then we'll consistently do it every Wednesday as far as the episodes. But you should get a new episode every week. We know that
for sure. That's set in stone.
Yes. So it's exciting.
Very exciting.
And so we're excited to have you guys on board with us.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you for listening.
Yes, thank you for listening and taking time out of your days to listen to us and chat and rant. And so, to get kickstarted into today's episode, we're going to have our pop culture moment. And I think we both want to talk about what, like, we both can do the same topic or whatever. Well, recently, The Color Purple has come out and the press tour for it has started running. And I think everyone has tuned in and peeped Taraji P. Henson, what she's expressed on her interviews and how she's expressed how she's been feeling towards her acting career and the entertainment industry. And yeah, we should both talk about that.
Yes. So that one's going to be yours because I have another one.
Oh, you have another one?
Yeah.
Okay.
We're going to talk about the Taraji one first.
Okay.
So yeah, what did you think when it came out? What is your take on everything?
Well, basically my main takeaway is the lack of recognition from the most important people that she should be getting from the people in her industry that she's not getting from. And then that resulting in her severe underpayment and how it leads into a lot of Black actors in the entertainment industry being underpaid and not recognized and little to no respect for them as actors and their true talent rather than using them when they, you know, need to. And then also being shocked that this came from a movie like The Color Purple, the fact that there had to be an argument for her to turn down or almost not accept the role because of the amount of money that she was going to make in the first place, which was not good, right? What was it? I don't remember what it was.
I don't know how much, but I know that there was something where I think they had said she only got paid like $250,000. I'm not sure one it was. I'll have to look at the numbers so that we are quoting the right thing, but it's definitely not what you would expect an Oscar winner
of all these other accolades. Awards
to be paid. So she's definitely underpaid. Yeah.
And just her expressing how she feels about this, not even just with the movie, but her wanting to give up on her acting career, being that, and also that she's not the first Black woman to say this or to express this. If anything, almost all of our favorite Black actresses in the entertainment industry were more than likely have all been underpaid and having to actually like go to the nail for their respect and minus all their awards that they've had, but to have all those awards, but then not be treated like all the trophies that they've been handed. So to accept all of the awards, but then not live the life of someone who is actually living in their talent. You know, does that make sense? Which is very shocking. But then the thing with Oprah, right? Mm-hmm. When they went on the press tour, the drift, you can tell, like, the literal...
The body language.
Yeah, the drift in her hand.
Definitely there's some issue there with Oprah. Because I think it's because she was already talking about the pay disparity, but then she kind of brought Oprah into it. Well, she didn't bring Oprah into it. She said the color purple, she almost had to turn down that role. So then it only leaves the audience to assume that they were also, in the beginning of negotiations, like, lowballing her like they normally do. I was just looking it up and it says she was paid $150,000 for her role in Benjamin Button. Trash. And that actually she was asking for $500,000 and they told her no.
What?
And it says she made less than 2% of what Brad Pitt made in the movie. Now, less I understand that Brad Pitt was the main character and everything else, but that's insane.
How much did he make, did it say?
I don't know, but I mean, we can calculate from there, right? The 2%. Then I have to divide by 0.02. Ah, look at that. You know my math.
She's smart.
Oh, Lord. Okay, so this is my take on everything. So one, I think it's a mistake that a lot of us do, and I have even fallen victim to that, where I'm like, I'm just a creative person and I just want to be creative and I don't really like the world of business. Well, unfortunately, in the day and age that we live in, you're expected to be a creative and you're expected to at least be somewhat business savvy. So I think the days are long gone where somebody can say, I just want to be creative, put my art into the world and the world receives it. Well, yeah, if you don't watch how your stuff gets handled, your creativity, it's only fair that you get paid for it, because sometimes, especially as a creative, we know how it can be draining on you. We know how sometimes there are things going on in your life that you have to work through just to still deliver and be there in whatever capacity of whatever field you're doing. So we all have to learn that we have to be business savvy, even when we're being creative. So that's the first mistake. I think she actually had another interview where she said she fired her entire team after she played on Empire because she felt like, you guys didn't bring me any work after that. And I felt like that was accurate, that was needed, because that was the second thing I was thinking about was, where's your team? Where are the people that you have that are negotiating for you, that even if you don't have the acumen and the savviness, where are the people that are supposed to be there having your back when they understand that if you don't eat, they don't eat? Like, they need to be like
working harder
than you.
Yeah,
exactly.
Just as hard as you and even harder, because like you said, she is the talent. It's kind of like you guys are surrounding her to build her up. So you guys,
she's the
also,
brand.
Yeah.
So without her, there's no job.
There's
so
no team.
Yeah. So I'm happy that she did that. So it was good that she fired her team. Mm-hmm. And then the last part of it is like, because I was saying the same thing as to, you know what, it's a solidarity thing, because if one actor stands up and they say no to something, it doesn't help if the next person comes through and they say yes. Mm-hmm. So for example, take the Benjamin Button movie. Sometimes it's a hard place to be because you have to decide, do I want this project to come out? And even though they're not paying me what I feel like I deserve, but at least that's my name out there. Mm-hmm. Instead of me now having to wait maybe another 2 years or 3 years before another project comes through. Mm-hmm. And that's a longer period of time, because let's be honest, as an audience, we're going to be like, what have we seen you in lately? Like, are you still alive? Is stuff still going for you? So there's that part of it too. Like, you always want to have something to do. I always think of, what's the lady that was in Stella Got Her Groove Back? The one with the light voice that's in Family Reunion. I always talk about how she's like the most employed Black actor in Hollywood. She has like the really light voice. I'll have to think of what her name is.
What else was she in?
She's in Family Reunion. She's been in a lot of stuff. I think she was in The Family That Prays. But you see her on so many shows. Like, you see her on TV. You see her in movies. She's been acting for a long time. And she's like the mother in Family Reunion with...
Oh,
I don't know why I'm... Her name, Loretta Devine.
Yeah, Loretta,
there you go.
Devine.
I always talk about Loretta Devine and I'm like, Loretta stays employed, okay? You will always see her in projects.
Yeah, she does. She's everywhere.
She's everywhere.
Yeah.
So I get it. Like, sometimes that's what they have to battle with, is like, okay, if I take a stand, that's going to be another maybe 2-3 years that I don't have projects coming through, that I don't have things coming up. So I think it is a bad spot that they are in. But relating it back to our everyday life, I think it's a problem in Hollywood, but it's also a problem for us as everyday regular people. Mm-hmm. This idea that you always have to fight for what you feel like you deserve. The numbers are there. The statistics are there. There's already disparities there when it's, you know, us as women in, you know, in the workplace asking for equal pay. Mm-hmm. And then you factor in other things such as us being Black women asking for equal pay. So for me, her having that issue just shows that it's a systemic issue. Mm-hmm. We have to fight for it too. I think I had the discussion with you, like, once you get your education, when you're doing certain things on the job, make sure you account for all those things in your resume. So when it comes time for you to ask for your pay raise, and the things that you feel like you deserve, you have everything listed that you have contributed, how you've been an asset. Mm-hmm. And I think we have to get out of like being shy about it, because mm-hmm. I shared with you that I passed up on an opportunity to kind of make a little shift. But the main reason why I didn't do it was because I did not agree with my pay.
Yeah.
And it was a tough decision for me to make, but I'm like, no, I know what I deserve and I know what I should get, and I'm not going to take anything less than that. Mm-hmm. So it's a tough spot for them to be in, because for them, saying no to a project is lack of exposure.
Mm-hmm, yeah. And a project may not come around like every year. Mm-hmm. You wait a couple years. There's like gaps in a lot of like actors' careers where they do one movie and it will be a while before you see them in another one.
Yeah. And so, now she has other brands. So yeah. I think that helps.
Yeah, that's the other thing, you
know, because her hair care line is going well. So she could turn down some things and be like, until you guys pay me what I deserve, I'm good, because I have other things that are working for me that are going to take care of things. Mm-hmm. So I don't really need, you know, you guys' validation, or I'm not really seeking it in that way.
Yeah. But then at the end of the day, it's a systemic problem that she mm-hmm. has to ask for what she deserves.
But it's not just her.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
And that's like, what I'm afraid of sometimes. Like when somebody is speaking out, it ends up being just like, oh, that's person's issue. It's the same thing they kind of did with Monique. People kept bringing up Monique when this stuff was coming up, and yeah. they're saying pretty much what Monique was complaining about is the same thing Taraji is complaining about. And if mm-hmm. we don't actually deal with it and we don't try to fix it, I'm just saying we, like I'm part of Hollywood, but if they don't try to fix it, it's a problem that's going to keep showing up. So like I said before, solidarity in some kind of way, like, okay, if a project is out there, if they say they have a spot for a Black person, I mean, let's be honest, there's only so many people they can be going around asking, right?
Right.
So if everybody already puts it like, look, we ain't going to accept anything less than this, then guess what? When they pull up and ask all of you guys, unless they're going to go import somebody from somewhere else. But yeah, like
says no, then yeah. they're going to have to like reconsider. They're going to have to renegotiate, because mm-hmm. if they're looking to fill the role and y'all are giving them little to nothing mm-hmm. and everybody's not accepting it, then they're going to have to change their way. Then we can look at the table differently mm-hmm. and there's going to be a shift.
Yeah. And but I think it's right. Like Monique's thing was like, they already paid her so little money, and then they wanted her to do the press tour. Mm-hmm. And that was not part of her contract, and she would have to go out of pocket for that. Mm-hmm. And I totally get her for that. I totally understand. And I think we as a people, we suffer from that. You see it in all walks of life for us, whereas like we sometimes are putting more effort towards looking the part than actually being the part. Mm-hmm. So like I said, all these people in Hollywood, because I kept seeing people talk about, oh, this is the problem with Black excellence. It's not a Black excellence problem. The problem is like when all this stuff is going on, all we see is just the glitz and the glamour of it. So until somebody like a Taraji lets us know, okay, this is what's going on behind the scenes, we don't know. So it's the same thing like when you always see like people look rich but they're not really rich.
Yeah.
Like we spend more time looking the part than actually being the part, like
playing it in its full.
Exactly. Yeah. So I feel like the takeaway is ownership, like how she's doing with her business. Mm-hmm. When people get the chance to be the producers, to be the ones behind the scenes financing things, I know it's difficult, but that was the beauty of Netflix, is that you could create something and then you go to them and you sell it. You can mm-hmm. do that route. So some of them also just kind of banking on themselves that way. And the ones who don't want to, really forming that good network among yourselves and hoping that everybody is on board in some way, shape, or form, where it's like, okay, we are not going to do this. Collectively, we're going to say no.
Collectively has to be unified.
They won't get anywhere without solidarity. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's where we as people of our hue.
Yes, of our hue.
Our hue. That's where sometimes we fall short, because it's easier for us to, you know, go in with the status quo than to, you know, go arm in arm with our brothers and sisters and do something that's against it. Mm-hmm. So I hope and pray that things work out. She gets what she deserves. If she doesn't, she dives into other parts of her creativity and she makes it.
Because I am buying the Taraji B. Henson body butter and hair care products. So
yes.
Girl.
Her Vinegar Rains did well for me. Because remember, we talked last week about the skin conditions.
Yeah.
And like for me, my scalp gets so flaky. Mm-hmm. So that Vinegar Rains was like one of the first things that I felt like really, really cleansed my scalp.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And I love the fact that it comes with like
with
the comb.
The spiky look.
So, girl, we got you. Yeah, we're out here buying your products. Exactly. You're going to be all right. If mm-hmm. these people don't want to pay you what you deserve, don't back down.
Buying.
Don't take it. Focus on your business. Develop something else. I mean, at this point, I trust you with hair. So she could even go into makeup.
Or skincare.
Skincare. Whatever else. You sell
you
it, we'll buy
fashion,
it.
Fashion, so, girl. You got it.
Yep.
Period. And
yeah, that was a good topic.
Yeah.
What was yours?
So mine.
Because I'm surprised. I'm like, what did she find?
So mine is about Dr. Jackie.
Oh,
so I don't know if you watch Married.
Show?
Do you watch Married to Medicine?
No.
Okay. So you don't watch Married to Medicine.
Mom used to all the time. But
yeah, she's not in the reality TV mix.
I am, but not in like Real Housewives, Married
to
Medicine.
So what reality TV do you watch?
I watch Love Island. I watch Love is Blind. I watch Big Brother.
Okay.
I watch, yeah. I'm in the competitive reality TV show realm.
Yeah, I'm in the drama reality
TV. Yeah, she's in the drama.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The women relationships. So Dr. Jackie recently, on the last episode of Married to Medicine, the episode that aired showed her meeting with Madam Vice President. I have to make sure I address her properly.
Madam Vice President,
Kamala Harris. And on there, they were talking about the maternal health issue. Well, I guess some people were like, I don't know why Jackie's the one having this position, because they digged up some old video of her from 2020 where she was...
That's not old.
Well, it's old. We're in 2023. We're about to be 24.
Well, if they're digging up an old video.
From 3 years ago.
That's not that old if it's bad. Because I don't know what the video, what you're about to say, but if it's from 20, yeah, that's only 3 years ago. But go ahead.
So in the video, she pretty much said, sometimes African-American patients are dramatic.
That's
and they
not
go
old.
Into
the What?
And they go into the doctor's office crying wolf. And that's why sometimes like when things are going wrong, then they're not taken seriously because they're being dramatic.
That's
so she released a statement because that stuff was going around like wildfire. I was like, this is the problem. Oh. And she released a statement later on just saying like, you know, she has worked hard for the Black families, you know, as far as like maternal health to reduce the rates that we see in this country, that for people to even accuse her out of that, they took this stuff out of context. So this is my problem. One, Dr. Jackie exemplified for me that the issue with the maternal health crisis in this country as it relates to Black women is a ideological white supremacist systemic issue that we have to all work to fight. Whether you are a practitioner of color or not, you have to really check the ways in which your training has embedded those ideas. Mm-hmm. So this idea that Black women don't feel pain, this idea that Black women are dramatic.
Insane.
Exactly. But that is why we have the rates that we do. Because when I give birth to a child and I'm telling you, I feel shortness of breath and you're telling me, you're fine. You're just being dramatic.
What?
You're okay. And then next, you know, you find out that I threw a clot and that's actually blocking me from breathing. And that was a real thing. Yeah. But when I was telling you for like 12 hours straight, you weren't listening. Mm. So all these different things, I've seen it before as a practitioner, like when somebody's in pain and a Black person can say they're in pain and we don't really address it, or we're like, oh, are they really? She just, you know, they just want drugs. But when somebody else of a different ethnic background says they're in pain, we address it right away. We treat it right away. How come we don't ever consider that, okay, that person might be seeking drugs too? Mm. Like, we just need it to be just the same across the board.
It needs to be, it needs to be treated the same.
And she just exemplified the fact that there will be some physicians, providers of color, that have the same mentality. And it's the mentality that's the problem. It's no different from when, what was the case that happened a couple years ago when it was like the Black police officers that ended up killing that one young man, and we were all up in arms about it. And it was like, yeah, because it's a systemic issue. Whenever it's a systemic issue, it doesn't matter the race of the person
who did
who's supposed to be providing the care, or in the case of the cops, supposed to be taking care of the public.
Yeah.
It is how they are indoctrinated
and how they are trained.
There's no way
everywhere.
Exactly. So as practitioners of color, as we get trained in this system, I think we owe it to ourselves, to the patients that we serve, to also make sure that we're always aware of that. And it's a learning curve for her. I think she can go further if she actually apologizes first, takes ownership and say, yes, I did say those things. I don't think I was thinking straight. I'm not aware that it's a viewpoint. That's part of the reason why we have the disparities in the way we do. Accountability will go way further instead of her kind of like, everybody felt like she was gaslighting the public.
Yeah.
Because it was like, I've done this and this and this. And they're like, Jackie, we're not saying you haven't done that, but we have you on tape saying that we are dramatic and we cry wolf our entire pregnancies. And that's the problem when it's not. It's the fact that, yeah, we have a system that treats us like the way, like you just said, you just actually validated it. So that was my little thing because, you know, I'm in healthcare. So I'm like, oh.
Yeah, she is a healthcare girl.
Oh, Lord. Lord, Lord, Lord. And that's why, like, for me, I always knew I wanted to stay away from women's health because I felt like I could not separate like how I feel about stuff and be as professional as I can be. I mean, I take that stuff very seriously, and I do not want to be in a position where I have to confront a provider because I'm like, look, what's going on? What's up? You know? And so I worked very hard to get the license that I do have. I'm like, I want to keep it. But it just makes me think there's a need. I mean, I've always known there's a need out there. And who knows where life takes me. Maybe eventually when I go off into the world of, you know, NP, I might consider it. But man, it's a lot. And until I learn how to separate, like how I'm feeling right now, like when I saw that story, it infuriated me. And it did not matter to me that she was somebody that looked like me, because clearly it's the thinking.
The way like, how, yeah, because it's bleeding. However she was trained or what she learned or what she went to school for, there's, like you said, there's systemic ways about how Black women are perceived that are cemented into how she's like showed up to be a doctor. Mm-hmm. So that's how it's showing and that's how it's being expressed into you, proudly saying that women who look like you are dramatic and cry wolf and are doing too much.
It's not acceptable.
It's like, you're a doctor. Find out why they're in pain, not mock them or belittle them because they're in pain.
Is subjective.
Yeah.
Just because you can handle a level 10.
Doesn't mean that
somebody else can handle a level 10. So even when sometimes as a practitioner, you're thinking, oh my gosh, this person might not necessarily be even saying the truth about their pain. Pain is subjective. So I have to treat it based on how you tell me. I tell my patients that all the time. My patients would be like, oh, my head hurts. I want a Tylenol. And I have to tell you, oh, what's your number? And you tell me, oh, my pain is a 7. And I'm like, sir, I know you're asking for a Tylenol, but based on your pain, I actually need to give you something higher.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Because the numbers match the meds that we give. Like when we are giving them meds, we ask you for your scale 1 to 10, and then we medicate you based on that. So you can't tell me I have a pain of 7, but I only want Tylenol. I can still give it to you, but now I have to chart against it and be like, patient stated pain was 7, but they insisted, even after a nurse educated the patient, that the patient wanted XYZ. So we always have to treat pain based on the patient. So she knows this. She's a physician. She knows this stuff. I feel like she had a lapse in her thought, but it's the innate things, right? The things that we don't intend that truly show how we go about life and how we do things.
Yeah. I feel like I would cringe and be mad if I saw that video. Because I mean, what are you talking about?
Pictures of women crying, because I don't even want to go into it for myself, but my second delivery was very traumatic for me. And part of it was because of the way I was treated as a woman of color giving birth. So, you know, Dr. Jackie, I'm not even trying to say anything harmful or hurtful. Like I said, nothing is meant to hurt anybody, but she's never like even carried. She's never had a baby, right? She's never experienced that in this country. No, like it's something that she shared on the show, something that she wanted, but eventually didn't pan out for her. So she doesn't even know what it's like being the patient. And that's important. Dr. Simone is also a OBGYN. I feel like she probably would never say anything like that because she knows what it's like being the physician and she also knows what it's like being the patient. It's very important, like that empathy. So she should have already known for herself, okay, even if I feel like sometimes my patients are being dramatic or whatever, I have to check myself because I don't know what it feels like to be them.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, hopefully it's a learning curve for her and we'll see. I think it's because VP chose her and that's why there's a light being shone on her. So
yeah,
hopefully
dug that video.
Oh yeah. Because that's how the world works these days. You have one good thing happening to you. Here comes everybody
have an opportunity.
She don't deserve it.
Right.
It can't be her. So
yeah. Okay, but that was a valid video
of course.
To bring up though. I can't lie.
She needs to answer for it.
Yeah.
And I think she needs to do another video where she just holds herself accountable. And these are the things we could do. Girl, that's not what we asked you for. We said, why did you say that thing that you said? And all you need to do is say, you know what? Lapse in judgment. I'm sorry. I apologize. And then you can come forth and say, I am going to be cognizant of this moving forward. And this is how I'm going to do X, Y, and Z. That's all we ask for. We know all the great things you have done. We know the VP wouldn't have considered you if you don't have all these accolades. That's not what we need. What we need is, I'm sorry I hurt you guys. I am sorry. And this is what I'm going to do to work on fixing it and how I'm going to keep putting this at my forefront and realizing that it's part of the problem.
Because especially now, since you are meeting with the vice president and then you're
supposed to represent us.
Yeah.
And this is what you say about us.
Yeah.
And that's why everybody's like, please make it make sense. You can't hold these beliefs and then you're here saying you're fighting and championing for us. I know that's true. I know. You know, she even chose that profession because the need was there. The need is still there. Just like how I'm saying, like, I'm not even like in that field right now, but it's one of the specialties I'm considering when I go to MP school. So it's like, I know it's there. I know the need is there, but you know, I was disappointed for sure.
Yeah.
But she's a human being. So we just ask for accountability. That's all.
So yeah.
So that's the pop culture. That was a long pop culture segment. That was like 30 minutes.
Last week's was long too, though.
Oh, it was?
I think.
Oh.
Yeah, because we were talking about Oprah again. Oprah, you have been mentioned twice for 2 weeks.
Oh. Yeah. Oprah, you're it.
Yes. Girl, it's you. Okay, so yeah, that was a good pop culture moment. Mm-hmm. And so our banter for today is going to be, I guess, generational. I don't know how to put it. If anything, this conversation was inspired by my last therapy session. Well, I was talking with my friend the other day who is back in Minnesota. She's like a really close friend of mine. And we were just catching up and I was asking her how she was doing, how she's been doing. And she asked me how I've been doing because she knows a lot of the things that I like have been through before I moved. And so, yeah, you know, she was just doing some checking up and everything. But basically, as I was talking to her, I realized that I have been doing a lot of healing since I've came down here. And I'm also growing up and becoming more mature day by day. Sliding into becoming more of a young lady. Mm-hmm. And there was like this moment under all the pressure, because one of my inner goals or like long-term goals is to make sure, try my best to break some generational curses or make sure that for the people and the women and people in my family tree that have come before me, that whatever that we've done for so long that hasn't been beneficial to our bloodline, that is, you know, people say quote unquote curse or, you know, just unhealthy ways, try my best while I'm here to change it and to break it. And then under all the pressure of everything that, you know, that I was going through, I just like had this, what am I doing? Like, what is my purpose? Like, I don't feel like I'm doing anything to do that. And so like I brought that up to my therapist and we were talking about it. And I guess just taking a step back and having those like checkpoints. Okay. Me being, yeah, my brain is moving 8 million miles. I have ADHD.
So before you get anywhere.
Yes.
Let's change the word generational curses.
Yeah, because I was trying, yeah, okay.
The generational part is right because they're passing it from one generation to another. But for us, sometimes I think when we say curse, then we automatically think the devil. Evil automatically, Satan. We take the responsibility away from the individual because it's like, oh, the devil made me do it. So unhealthy generational patterns that we are now trying to change. Because there are generational patterns that are great that we pass on. And then there are generational patterns that are unhealthy. And we are trying to change the unhealthy generational patterns. So this is coming from somebody who I'm very spiritual. I do know that there are some times that it's like, man, what kind of stuff is on our family? You know, you might be looking at your family member and be like, man, what is on us? What is happening? You know, all those things. But a chance is more likely than that. After we've prayed, I always believe in prayer.
Yeah.
There will be some patterns there. When you start seeing them, you'll be like, oh, this is how we handle things. And maybe that's why this happens to us. Like, in our family, we don't talk. We just fight, you know? I'm not saying my personal family. I'm just saying, I'm just giving an example. Somebody might see that in their family, instead of them discussing things, people just start fighting and throwing hands. Violence. And that's what they do. So that's an unhealthy generational pattern. So I just want to move away from the curse part, because I feel like when we use the word curse, then it's like we put it on the devil and we're just like, well, let's just pray about it. Like, and it's like, yeah, we should pray about it. But we also have to actively do things to change it. Or else we're kind of taking the responsibility away from the people that are creating the chaos and the drama and everything else. Because we're just saying it's a curse. The devil put it on us. We have no choice but to live by it or something. So that's my first little tidbit to you.
Okay. So, well,
unhealthy generational patterns.
Unhealthy generational patterns, yes. And yeah, I feel like also to give myself grace, because all the patterns that have come before me, like, they're not my burden to carry and they're not necessarily something that, you know, is, you know, like, I'm not the devil's spawn or anything, but it's also something that I feel like when I look back, it's just look at the patterns in our family. I want to at least change something. And I feel like I am at 18 and having this awareness already and then have these conversations with you. Because, like, you know, I'm the generation after you. So
I guess take it one stage at a time. I think that will help. Because there will be many things that have been done the wrong way that you will try to fix.
Yeah.
But you take it as you come through every stage. So in the stage that you're at right now, it's about you getting your education, setting yourself up for financially, doing those things. So then you look at, for example, when I was your age, the main thing for me was I did not want to have a child outside of wedlock. Like, I looked at all the people in my family and looked at things and I was like, look, that's not for me. I don't want it. So everything I did was actively to that. So I wouldn't have any relationship that I felt like is not going anywhere or it's not anything serious. Like, that's something that was amazing. Exactly. Because I'm just like, nope, absolutely not. Mm-hmm. That's not something I want for myself. That's I want to break without realizing it. Yeah. I wanted to break that pattern in a way. And I strive for that. So you have to look at what are you at right now? Mm-hmm. What stage are you at right now? What are the patterns that you might have seen when the people were at your stage and at your age? And then you break some of those. And yeah, sometimes it might be one or two of them that you get to break. And then when the next stage comes, you do the same thing again. When you have kids, you say, okay, what are the things I can do when my kids are little that maybe wasn't there for me when I was their age? And then you just keep going as they grow. Mm-hmm. It's better that way. Unless you get overwhelmed.
Yeah.
Because it's like, oh, I got to fight this. And then you got to do this.
And then you feel like you're not doing anything. And then, it's just like, I guess the phase that I am right now is, you know, growing into just, I'm just growing. And like you said, education. Yes. And
sometimes that's another thing. There's some people who their parents never got a college education. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So even finishing school and getting a degree and having a job where you can take care of yourself, that's breaking a curse in some way. Because, you know, there are people out there, they might be the first one out of their family.
Yeah.
To make it far, to even say, oh, I'm going to get a PhD. Yeah, it's like, what? Mm-hmm. I mean, I didn't know those families can exist until I interacted with people that were part of those families. And I'm like, oh, okay, you think you're going to go off to college? Okay, all right. We don't do that, but we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's there.
It is there. Mm-hmm. And I feel like another thing is like financial stability too is like another one. Because even seeing like where all the hard work that has been put into where we are at now, to also want, that's something I want to pass down and just like not forgetting that, you know, just because it didn't happen with like when I was younger, you know, we weren't always financially stable or anything. That's also one of my goals, to make sure that I'm not, you know, struggling to survive financially every day. Mm-hmm. So that's one of my, you know, things, I guess. And then you kind of answered my question, like with your, I said, like, what are some patterns that you, like when you were growing up, that you aspired to break when you looked at our family? Because some things that you look back at, you're realizing that you broke them now rather than, you know, when you were younger, when you were my age.
That one I actively, because I don't know what it was. I think maybe it was seeing all the chaos that comes from it.
Yeah.
All the, I was like, no, I don't want no parts of that. Mm-hmm. So I had told myself that one was in the back of my head where I was like, nope, I can't do that. So I knew for sure I wanted to break that. But yeah, everything else, as far as like education wise, I never even thought of it. I just felt like, I'm just going to go as far as I can possibly go until I don't feel like doing it anymore or until, you know, life happens or something stops me. Mm-hmm. But with that one, I just wanted to just be independent as, just like what you're feeling now, like be as independent and as self-sufficient as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And that meant me having my education in some ways, because then I can have a job and take care of myself and do X, Y, and Z and take care of those around me. So it's just, I knew I for sure wanted to have higher education. And there's a part of me, like when I was younger, I wanted to be a medical doctor.
Mm-hmm.
But there were certain things that for my own personal accountability, it just wasn't there for me. Do I feel like now I have a better sense of who I am? And, you know, it could have panned out if it was now. Yes. Do I want to pursue that now? Heck no. I'm tired of school. I'm tired of no.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I learn enough in the school of life. Like I read when I'm not required to. And yeah, but the physical aspect of school, I will do what I have to do, but it's not my interest at this point in my life. Yeah.
Okay. So I guess, well, it's like getting a little bit more like personal, I guess.
Okay.
I feel like we can both answer this like together, like as we talk. But okay. Right now, I feel like it's a thing that, you know, we're all trying to, I guess, battle. It's like the emotional well-being of our family sometimes is shot. And it's a very strong feeling for me. I can tell, like, you know, the emotional well-being about our family, you know, has been unhealthy for a while. Where a lot of it comes from for me is not wanting that to be a part of, like, you know, my family when I do build one, when I grow older, like, you know, in the future.
So then you have to be like specific.
Naming. Yeah.
So then it'll be like, okay, when we get angry, we do this. Like, you literally have to name it, because that's how you know what you are attacking and what you're trying to change.
Yeah. Well, I feel like one of the most prominent things is like the relationship with my mother. Even, you know, mom's relationship with grandma, like with her mother, there's an unhealthy pattern about how we mother or nurture in our family, or lack thereof. So for me, I guess with my mom, there's a lack of love there. She didn't heal enough to come to a point where she had kids to not realize that all her pain was being transferred down to us. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was like withholding love from us, or just like unhealthy patterns that she was going through when she was being raised were then not as intense and as extreme, but I feel like they were very much computed into a very negative emotional way when we were growing up and like, you know, with my sisters. And I feel like it's work that we're going to have to do. But then I see that also, you know, she didn't have a good relationship with grandma as well, or the relationship that they do have is kind of rocky. So I like one of my, what's the word? Not like goals.
It is.
Heal as much as...
It will be a goal. Mm-hmm. One of the things that you're always going to be cognizant of is making sure that the woman-to-woman relationship in your family, the one that you're creating and moving forward, because one thing I've come to realize is we can't change the ones that came before us. We can only change us in hopes of changing the ones that come after. Mm-hmm. So you can't change your mom, you can't change your grandma, you can't change your great-grandma, you can't change none of that. Mm-hmm. But you then realize those unhealthy patterns that they have that you say, okay, I want to break myself free of that. Mm-hmm. So that'll be something that you have in the back of your head. So you can even start practicing now, making sure you're doing it with your sisters, making sure you're doing it with your cousins, because you see that there's a strain there in the female relationships. So everybody that's female that's attached to you right now, you start working on that so that by the time you have your own daughters, you've kind of already eased yourself into it and saying, okay, this is how I want to raise them and this is what I want to do differently.
Mm-hmm. What are some for you?
Oh, Lord. I think emotional regulation is a very important one. Mm-hmm. I think we get angry sometimes and we don't always know how to compartmentalize. So it's like, I can be angry at you, but it doesn't mean I don't still love you.
Yeah.
I can be angry with the action that you took. I can be mad because I feel like you made the wrong decision. But under no circumstances doesn't mean that you stop being my niece, being the person that I love. So understanding that, like, yeah, like I think you kind of hit it on the head a little bit. Withholding love, like just because you're mad at one thing or something is not right doesn't mean that the other is not.
Yeah, very much so.
I think that's very much so a part of, like you're saying, like our family DNA, like understanding that
because the effects of that I've felt and had to deal with is when it was done to me, like when I was younger, now there's a fear of confrontation or speaking up for myself when something happens, because if I do, there's going to be the reaction of hatred, or like there's going to be love withheld. So it's like on the other half of that, if you're not aware of what you're doing to someone, like my mom, I don't think she was ever aware that's what she was doing when it became to outside of family, to me being like a people pleaser or just very much being a yes man or acting for
when somebody
someone.
Say jump, you jump. When whatever when they someone, want you to
whatever
do.
Whatever they want me to do, I do it because... If anything
peace.
Else, yeah, if there was no peace or there was no conflict, then it would be a, like the fear of abandonment, actually, to also like that would also be tied into it. Just like it would not be like it would be all gone, and it can be gone in a blink of an eye, because it would be like my mom would be unhappy one minute and then things were said and then love was withheld and it was that quick. But then also it was that quick. She also turned it off, which was also very unhealthy because nothing was ever consistent. Mm-hmm. It was always a constant emotional roller coaster. Mm-hmm. So then to go outside of home and outside of family relationships, wanting to have peace all the time, because you know what it's like to be in an emotional roller coaster and like a very crucial relationship in your life with my mom. So I didn't want that anywhere else. But it's also
you on the other extreme.
Yeah, on the other extreme. But
you
then
from one extreme to the other.
Yeah, but then being on the other extreme is not healthy either.
No extremes are good. Balance is what life is about. Mm-hmm. So there are times when you have to have confrontations and there's time for peace. Mm-hmm. And one should not always take the place of the other. So you don't say, oh, I don't want to have confrontation because I want to have peace. And you don't say, oh, I'm peaceful now because I'm just afraid of confrontations. Like there'll be, you don't want the person that's fighting every time either, but you don't want the person that's always avoiding having the conversations either.
Yeah, avoidance.
It's too. A balance, you know, like everything else. Mm-hmm. So I think that is one.
Yeah, and that goes with emotional regulation, yeah.
And to be honest with you, I probably practiced that in some way, shape or fashion up until today. And that's just, you know, we came on this podcast to be honest. Mm-hmm. So we always have to be honest. Mm-hmm. Am I always aware of it when I'm doing it? Absolutely not. But like everything else with life, when something is your pattern or that's how everybody around you has done stuff, I joke around saying my cutoff game is quick. But truly, like when I love so deeply. Mm-hmm. When I love, I give people my all. When I all love, if I go to the bat for you, I'm going to the bat for you. When I love, I will let you tell me what you think I want to hear and even make the excuses for you. But when I say I'm done,
she's done.
I'm done. And I don't know what it's been like for people who have been on the receiving end of when I do the cutoff.
Yeah. Ice cold moment.
I can't imagine that it's been wonderful and it's been great for them. Mm-hmm. But I think it just shows how much that person had meant to me. Life is all about perception.
Yeah.
That I felt in some way they have hurt me. And so then I choose to cut them out because I'm just like, so I don't know, because I don't feel like that's necessarily me withholding feelings or withholding emotion.
I don't think it's withholding love, because when you said, when you feel like your love for them has been attacked in some way.
Or taken advantage of. Definitely hurt me. A lot of times the trust that I had, something is done to just make me like feel worthless or not.
Then it's a complete cutoff.
Yeah.
Because again, like, as
but maybe I do withhold love. I don't know. Like, only my kids could tell that. I guess I could ask them.
Yeah.
So maybe this is like a conversation that we do homework and come back to. But ask them, like, okay, when mommy's mad at you, do you feel like I withhold love? Maybe I used to do it, but I think I'm
getting better.
I'm doing a good job of like, when even I'm mad at them, I'm like, okay, do you know why I was angry about why I said this? And do you know why? Mm. And yeah,
instead of shutting it all out. Mm-hmm. Because I think when you feel like something has been breached, like your trust or your love has been taken advantage of, because love is like a big concept that I feel like we try our best to truly wrap our head around. Mm-hmm. But even when something like that happens, I guess, rather than the cutoff to extend your love even further, to express why somebody did something that they did, or try to not understand, but you just go to cut off rather than.
Yes, because I hate feeling like somebody is taking advantage of me. I think
it is a bad feeling.
Yeah, because I give so much of myself that for me to find out that, man, not only was I open, not only did I give you all of me, but to find out like behind the scenes, you didn't really like me. You were making fun of me. You were saying X, Y, and Z behind me. You were telling people I'm bad and I'm this. And like, so when I hear those things or whatever, it's just like, man, really? And sometimes I battle with myself because I think, like I said, I'll give people many chances. So yeah. I'll go back and be like, oh, okay, let me try to work through it. But then it will always be there in the back of my head. And I think once that's broken, it's very, very difficult for me.
To move forward.
So then that's why I just do the cutoff, because I, like, it's adulterated now. It's almost like there's a lovely cake and somebody pooped on it. That is it. So it's like, I now can't unsee the poop cake.
Mm-hmm. Even if you talk about it, like before you do a cutoff, is it just cut off, or do you let them know why you're getting cut off?
I used to express, but then unfortunately, some people that I've dealt with in my life, that actually just emboldens them more, because it makes them realize, oh, wow, this person really holds the relationship I have with them as something important. And then those individuals have actually taken advantage of it even more, because it's like, oh, okay, I really know now what. So then I can get away with murder. So I don't anymore. Like, I just do the 1-2 step. Like, you would just be like, oh, I used to kick it with Tony all the time. And
now I don't. Where's she at?
You know, exactly. So I don't even bother anymore. And it might change. One of the things I'm coming to realize is, you know, I always used to tell myself that when things have caused people to hurt you or harm you, as hurtful and as difficult as it has been sometimes to work through that stuff, really trying to make sure I give other people a fresh start, but me not being an idiot and continuing the same negative patterns over again. So if I feel like when I started a relationship, right, with a female, that in the past, I'll just be open, like say everything, you know, you get to see my whole life. And then if I've been hurt enough by that, then what I come to learn is it doesn't mean that the next person I meet, I shouldn't be open to them. I just need to first judge their character so I know, okay, in what ways can I be open to this person? And then what are the things for me, regardless of that relationship, that are sacred to me that I don't necessarily have to share?
Yeah.
But yeah, I think withholding love is so important, like,
yeah,
for us important to talk about it, especially with our children, mother, daughter, mother, son, just your children in general, because it's the action that's bad. So if my child stole something today, you know, stealing is bad. I don't condone it. I'll have to discipline you and everything else. But afterwards, I need to have the conversation with, you know, I still love you, right? But you know what you did was wrong, so that they're always aware that it's the action that I'm disciplining, and not because, oh, I think this child is bad, or I think this child is this. It's not the child, it's how they behave, their behavior that is not good. And making sure as parents, like even with your significant other too, making sure that when they do things that we don't like, that we still don't like withhold.
Rip everything away from them. Yeah, because I feel like it's super damaging.
It's damaging. And I guess I've been on the receiving end, and like I'm saying, like,
yeah, that's what
I've probably dealt it out too in some ways. I think a lot of times when the people are dealing, at least I should speak for myself, I do feel like there will be some people out there that are like, ah, watch them suffer, I'm going to punish them now. But for me, the withdrawal that somebody might notice is because of I'm hurt. So it's not even intentional.
It's now
a protective capacity that's coming forward.
Defense mechanism.
Exactly. It's like, now I have my hard shell just so I can protect myself.
Just so, yeah, because then you become like iced out or shut it out. I mean, like you put your shield on because like you said, like you're hurt, like something has been done to like hurt you, but then it's like a defense mechanism that that's what you know. Like it's been, what was the word you used earlier?
Unadulterated,
something like that. But it's been embedded for you. Like when something happens, now that's where your body's gonna.
Think of adultery. So before, like, think of adultery, like when somebody's cheating or whatever. So something that's unadulterated is like it's pure. It's real. Like the love is
unadulterated.
Yes, that's your vocabulary word of the day.
Yes, madam.
Unadulterated.
Oh.
You did not know I can speak it like that. Unadulterated.
Unadulterated.
There you go. That's the word for the day.
But yes.
So, yeah. I guess we end up talking about a lot this episode, huh?
A lot this episode. So, and it's going to leave us room to talk about.
We need to have a part two.
Yeah.
I feel like we need to have a part two of last week's topic, and definitely need to have a part two of this topic.
Yeah, we can dive into it more.
Do we have time for one more question? Yeah, we can do one more question.
One more question. Only have two questions.
Have we already covered everything you wanted to cover? Okay, well, this is an exercise I think both of us should do. What will Dr. Anita, because I did read her book. Did you ever read her book?
No.
So maybe you should. I have it on.
I wish I asked for more books this Christmas, because I have a whole book list that I have to drop a bag on.
A bag. I just do Audible and it just automatically takes the money out, and then I get like one credit per month. And so I use that to buy the book, and then I just listen on my way to work. That's really when I listen to my books.
I didn't know to work. That's how it works.
And so Dr. Anita's book about like just healing our gardens, I think can apply here, right? Because she usually talks about the soil. The soil, you know, is very important for how things grow.
Yeah.
So it's understanding that there are parts of us that have not been the best. The example of like the soil that's on the rock. So when something grows off it, when it starts trying to get the roots, it won't go that far, right? Because there's a rock underneath it, or the ground is too shallow, or the soil is not the best. So thinking about it that way, like we are all these beautiful roses, and some of us have good soil, and some of us, we have soil that's not so great. And the key to gardening is you can transplant something. So you can take something that might not be on the best soil and you put it somewhere else, or maybe you have the backbone of good soil but it's just dry, it's just parched. So you add what, fertilizer to it, you add all these other things to it to help it get there. So I think looking at it that way, then it's like, yeah, we all have soil, and maybe that, maybe your soil is on top of a rock. You need to take yourself from one place to somewhere else because that environment is just not going to work. Right?
Yeah.
But then if you have soil, that there's something there that you can work through, that you can make better, why not? And that's what we're doing now. So through therapy,
through these conversations,
having the conversations, which is why we created this podcast in the first place, so that we can have them, so that we can encourage other people to have them.
Yeah, also.
And collectively.
Because hearing something like this, it's like it gives room for relatability. And then also it's like connection as well, to know that sometimes people who feel alone and may not have any guidance, to hear that there are people like us out here talking about our experiences and about our life and trying to
work through our generational patterns. Our negative generational patterns that we're trying to break.
You can too.
Yeah.
Let's all do it together. Let's all be happy, please.
Yes.
Let's live in peace.
Well, let's confront things when we need to confront them. But yeah,
for real.
Yeah, I'm working on that.
I had to work through that too. I think I always used to be scared of like having confrontations and saying things. But now I'm like at the place, it's like if somebody does something to me, I'm like, throw it right back. How does that feel now?
Oh, well, she do. She do. Best believe she do.
And the person
don't
might.
Her.
You know, but it took a lot of years. Like, it took me getting to the place, like, learning I don't need permission to exist on this earth. I'm already existing.
Yes. That is so true. And I feel like it's seeping deeper and deeper into my brain every day.
You're already here. So what are you begging permission for you to exist? Like, I already exist. You either love me as I am, take me as I am, or you don't. I'm either somebody you want in your life or I'm not.
Because at the end of the day, we're both going to exist.
Exactly. But I'm not going to go away.
Exactly.
Like, until God says so.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm already on this earth. So why am I begging for permission? And I think, yeah, that explains that question that you asked earlier. I think I used to do that a lot. It's like part of the people pleasing and me just bending over and just like, I'll just do whatever.
Trying
like,
to neutralize everything
I'm just like
too.
Yeah. And then I just got to the point where I was like, you know what? You do wrong by me. You're out.
Because it's not your job.
Too.
Bro, just like it's not
the way
your
you
job.
Say, it's not your job.
It's not your job.
Okay, Shannon.
It's not your job.
It's not your job.
Just live. Just wake up. Breathe.
It's not your job, Gina.
Be kind. Be happy. But then at the same time, like, you know, there are things that we all have to deal with because we all have soil.
Some on rocks, some on the dang sand. You know, you're trying to grow a rose, well, you got a sand. You ain't even got soil. You got to do a whole transplant. Not a whole transplant, but I said whole, not a whole transplant.
A what?
That's why I said whole. I had to be.
H-O-L-E.
Yes.
No, W-H-O-L-E. Jesus Christ. Wow. Wait, guys, today's not my day.
Did you just use the name of the Lord in vain?
No, I didn't. I said Sally Annemeth Bay. I did not. That was a glitch.
God
what?
Forgive her, please.
That was a glitch in the system.
Let's do the sign of the cross.
Balance on Holy Spirit.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, that was definitely a part two, though.
Yes, we need to have a part two because I think we need it's the conversation that helped to spark some things in us that we need to go back and talk.
Yeah, so, because listening to this back, I'm just going to have more ideas that I want to talk about.
Exactly. So you as the listeners, because after this episode, actually, we would go live. So by the time this episode is up, this would be like, what, episode number 4?
Yes.
So at this point, we will be taking comments. So I think it would be interesting if anybody wants to, you know, write to us. On the next episode, we'll share what our social media names are and everything. So you'll be able to look us up online and be able to have access to that. But write us online, shoot us an email. We'll have the email up and everything else too. And just letting us know, what have you learned in your journey of breaking your, you know, generational patterns.
Unhealthy
generational patterns.
Not curses.
Okay.
Patterns.
Yes. Because we're going to hold ourselves accountable. And yeah. Because sometimes the curse seems like it's finite too. Mm-hmm. It's just like, oh, I'm cursed. So then what can I do?
So
like,
yeah, there's nothing I can do about it.
So it's just a pattern that we just need to develop another pattern.
Yeah.
To undo the bad ones. Yeah. So share with us, what's your journey been like? How are you breaking those patterns?
And what are the patterns?
Yeah, what are the patterns
that you're wanting to break?
The one we talked about today was withholding love. And so she's holding her heart, y'all. Does your heart hurt?
Yes.
Your chest.
My chest.
Say it with your chest.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes. Well, thank you guys for listening.
Oh, wait. Music. Why are you doing that? Yes.
Chai.
Hey.
Okay. Music.
What is your pop culture? Wait, no, not pop culture.
Oh, she's going to go all the way back.
Hey, we are starting back again.
What?
We are starting in the beginning. In the beginning. There's a video of a Nigerian guy. He could not say beginning. Say in the beginning.
There's a video of this Kenyan man trying to say, don't judge the book, judge the cover. Judge the cover. He's trying to say, never judge a book by its cover.
Oh my gosh.
But yeah, he's trying to say, don't judge a book by its cover. And he's like, don't judge the cover, judge the book. Don't judge the cover. When you read a book, I have to find it for you because it's so funny.
Oh, Lord. So he was trying to work that through.
He like,
so when you read a book, like judge the
40
cover.
Seconds. It's so funny.
Oh, Lord. Online videos be getting the best of us. Mm-hmm. Ah, my song of the week. Let's see. What is something new I've heard this week or something that I added to my playlist? I think I'm actually going to have to pull up my playlist because I don't remember the last song that I added on there. Actually, I think I do know. It's the Uncle Waffle song. It's the Peacocks.
Hey, Peacock Revisit.
Yes. Hey. I'm a piano. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Uncle Waffles, Peacock.
I like that song.
Revisit.
Well.
Mm-hmm.
That's
it.
Oh, I'll say That's You by Lucky Day.
Oh.
Yeah, that song is cute.
Lucky Day.
I like me some Lucky Day.
So you have Lucky Day.
Lucky.
We need to remember all the songs because I think we have to do our playlist soon.
Playlist soon, yeah.
When we launch.
I'll do that. Can I do that? Together. I will do that.
Yes.
I'll be in charge of the band to playlist.
Yes. I know. So that way, in case people forget, they can always go back and also listen to the playlist as we're putting it together week by week. Technically, you're getting two songs per week, two for one. Ah, look at that.
Getting
from
spoiled.
Master musicians, from two connoisseurs of music.
Hey!
Yeah?
With taste.
Yes.
Quality.
Quality. Mm. Quality things. Quality things. So thank you.
Thank you, everyone, for listening.
For listening to us another week.
Giving us an ear.
Look at that. We did that.
We did.
Week number four. This is the 1 month mark. We made it.
Exactly. Exactly. She doesn't know a video.
What? Exactly. How many Kenyan videos have you been watching?
It's not Kenyan.
What video is this one?
You don't want to know.
Okay.
Exactly. This
Clearly
is why
the person is African because you have an African accent.
No, African American.
And they said exactly.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay, that's why this is a cross-generational Gen Z and millennial. That's all I have to say.
Now, wow. Excuse me. I don't know. I didn't know and I don't want to know. Exactly.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you, everyone.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye. You just finished another episode of Banta with Tony and Mimi. We just want to say thank you for taking the time out of your day to listen to our podcast. Have a blessed one.